I'm going to read from Luke chapter 2 and the first few verses. Luke chapter 2. And it came to pass in those days that a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. The census first took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria. So all went to be registered, everyone to his own city. Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem. And I'll leave it there. I'm sure I'm not alone over the years. That during a carol service, I was asked to read, perhaps you were as a child, and you were given this chapter. And as your eyes moved along the text, you saw that horrible word coming. And you may have practiced it, or maybe you didn't, but it comes. And it's one of the hardest words to say, especially when everybody's watching you and the church is full and the lights are dim. Quirinius. I'd like to speak about him this evening. And there's not a great deal about him, it must be said. I don't think it will be a particularly long word. But Quirinius, we're told in verse 2, was the governor of Syria. His is one of those names which is always being read in December throughout the world, and yet of the man himself we know very little. So I'm just going to make three very simple points about him. The first one is his power. He was a powerful man. We know that he's the Roman governor of Syria. And when a son of Herod the Great died, called Archelaus, he also inherited his territory, including Judea. So he's a Roman governor, personal friends with the emperor. And his territory is enlarged. And when that emperor, Augustus, died, he was also very friendly with the new emperor. I think he'd been seeing which direction the wind would blow and courting the right people. So he was also friends with Tiberius. During his career, he had been a general. He had defeated various tribes. He'd even warranted a triumph in Rome. Not an honour given to every general. And when he did finally die, he was given a state funeral in Rome. As far as anybody who lived in Judea or Syria or Samaria was concerned, Quirinius was the most powerful man they were ever likely to meet. He acted with the approval and the authority of the world's most powerful man, Augustus. He had legions at his disposal. He had a large palace and a base in Antioch, a very, very powerful man. And yet, in another respect, he's also quite a petty man. But for Luke mentioning his name, pretty much everybody alive today would never have heard of him. Now, there have been a few archaeological finds, and people who study classics and Roman history will have come across him. But actually, it's his mention in the Bible, his very, very tiny bit part, which has given him a far greater fame than any other written source about him. And yet, although he's mentioned, he really is just a passing remark. Luke is given some historical background to people in the first century. This was the emperor, and this was the governor. Apart from that, he appears to play no part whatsoever. In his day, he was powerful. Now he's just a footnote. He's just a difficult word that children practice in front of a mirror before they go to a nativity play or before they read in a carol service. Even in the context of the text, He might be the most powerful man in Syria, but he was very much subject to the Roman Emperor, who could dismiss him at will. And yet there is another pettiness about him as well. The emperor wants to find out how many people are living in the empire, almost certainly for reasons of taxation. Why else would he want to know? And Quirinius is responsible for administering that large event on his patch. It's probably a burden he could have done without, but as a loyal bureaucrat, he does it. He's doing the emperor's will. And yet he was doing the will of the great God of heaven, whom he probably didn't even believe in. We know from the text that the man who would be called a Nazarene and would be raised in Nazareth would somehow have to be born in Bethlehem because he was the heir of David. And I'm sure if Joseph, given the choice of subjecting his wife to a long journey in that state of maternity, could have objected and overruled, he would have done so. But the great God of heaven moved the heart of an emperor and a governor to require him to go to Bethlehem just in time for the birth of the heir of David, the key of David, about whom we've just been singing, to be born in the city of David, that he might become a greater David. There were prophecies being fulfilled about which Quirinius was entirely ignorant. He was the unwitting tool of a one far greater than Caesar in Rome. Another reminder, I think, that although Quirinius was powerful in his day, in the wider scheme of God, he was just another petty screwdriver that the greater, wider purposes of eternal God would be fulfilled, whether he agreed to do it or not, whether he understood what he was doing or not. And my third point, which of course also begins with a P, maybe it's a bit forced, but his prostration. It's interesting in the text, we have Caesar Augustus at the beginning of chapter 2. Then we have Quirinius, a step down. And then we have Joseph, a carpenter from a backwater. And in verse 5, we have the word child. From the most important man on the planet at that time to an unborn child. And yet we know actually the order is reversed. Not only in the terms of Luke's gospel as a literary work, Quirinius will never be mentioned again, and Augustus will be dead before the Lord takes up his public ministry. But in terms of world history, Jesus Christ made a far greater impact than Augustus or Quirinius. In terms of cosmic, divine power, Augustus, who claimed to be a god, is now waiting in Hades. But the unborn child of chapter 5 is reigning at the right hand of the Father. And Quirinius, who was technically in charge of Joseph and Mary and their unborn child, a man who received Caesar's delegated power in that portion of the empire, where is he now? He's waiting in the vast halls of eternity. I wouldn't like to say who died in a state of grace and who didn't. Especially people from a pagan background who had a very, very limited understanding of scriptural truth. So we don't know. Nevertheless, Quirinius, who lived in that great palace in Antioch, and this baby, who came from a modest dwelling, to be born in an even more modest surrounding. That baby was far greater than Quirinius. And whether he will do so voluntarily or forcibly, his knee will bow to Jesus Christ. His tongue will confess, not that Augustus is Lord, but that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Augustus did not claim to be a god while he was on earth, but he expected to become one when he died. By the time you get to the 80s and the 90s, living emperors claimed to be God, but we're not there yet. Augustus did not become a god when he died, and he wasn't one while he lived. But the real God came down on their watch. Became a baby and grew into a man. It's almost like Augustus is a pale reflection, a parody of the real Son of God. But Augustus and Quirinius, about whom I'm really meant to be speaking, they will, or they are, already now prostrate before Jesus Christ, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. In his day, the name Quirinius was terrifying, not because people had to recite the name, but because of the power and the fear and the domination which it spoke to people alive when Luke chapter 2, the events therein were unfolding. Now, he's a nobody. But Jesus Christ continues to be worshipped, proclaimed, preached. And one day he will come back. So Quirinius was powerful, but not anymore. In one respect, in his day, although he was powerful, he was also petty, even more so now. And the man who then would only bow to Augustus and then Tiberius is now bowing to one who was born in his territory. Kings come and go. Emperors rise and fall. Presidents appear and disappear. But Jesus Christ will reign forever and forever. Amen.